today's show is proudly sponsored by Minding the Gap. You guys all know that mental health for dancers matters. You're on board. You want to see the culture in your studio change, but where do you start? Enter Minding the Gap. Minding the Gap is dedicated to seeing mental health regarded with the same seriousness as physical health in dance culture, and they come armed with solutions. Whether it's helping you craft policies and procedures that protect the mental wellness of dancers and staff, consulting to build a robust mental health program in your school or company, or providing mental health skills workshops for your students and teachers, Minding the Gap has you covered. They bring the expertise of the best dance mental health experts in the world to you. For more information, visit www.wearemindingthegap.org or click the link in the show notes. Hello, dancers. Welcome back. Today's episode is a truly uplifting example of how dance institutions can bring in programming to facilitate the development of excellence in dance without compromising dancers' mental health. In fact, they can work to improve the dancers' quality of life. I spoke with Sarah Gonzalez, the pre-professional education program director at Keshet Dance and Center for the Arts. At Keshet, their vision is to celebrate the art of dance and be a welcoming home for the intersection of the arts, artists, and the audience, actuating a flourishing environment for empowered individuals, nurtured communities, and sustained equity. Not only is this their vision, but it's manifested in an amazing program full of mentorship, excellence, and love. My hope, or at least one of them anyway, for the future of ballet, would be for all dance institutions to adopt similar visions and facilitate happy, healthy, and well-rounded dancers. Please remember that I am not a mental health professional, and anything you hear me say on the show is based on my personal experience and perspectives and should not be considered medical advice. By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use any of the content to diagnose yourself or anyone else of any mental or health condition. If any of the things shared on the show resonate with you, I encourage you to talk to your doctor or click the link in the show notes to find the best healthcare professional for you. And don't forget, guys, that anything I say on the podcast today reflects my dance experience as a whole and not any one teacher, studio, or company. The opinions shared by my guests in this episode are their own and come from their individual viewpoint. This was such a fun and hopeful discussion with Sarah, and I can't wait for you guys to listen. So, here you go. Hello, hello, dancers. Welcome back. I'm so excited to introduce to you today my very good friend, Sarah Gonzalez. She is the pre-professional program director at Keshet Dance Center for the Arts. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Yay. So good to see your face.
It's nice to see you too.
Yeah, everyone, gosh. Sarah and I go way, 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 way back to baby ballerina days.
Long time ago. Long time ago.
Long time ago.
Much shorter.
Yes. Yes, for sure. But Sarah has been someone I've kind of kept on my radar after leaving school, and she has an amazing career and educational background I'll let her tell you all about. I'm here today to talk to her about all the amazing things that are happening at Keshet and how you can get involved if you're local. So Sarah, I'd love to hear, let's give our listeners a brief overview of your relationship with ballet. And if it's relevant and you feel comfortable, you could also include details about what role your mental health has played throughout your dancing career and how you became to be not only the pre-professional education program director at Keshet, but also a dance historian.
Cool. I come from a pretty artsy family. My parents met while singing in church choir together, and they own their own film and video production company. And so love movie musicals. And my mom showed my brother and me as many musicals as she could when we were growing up. And so we were like, we want to do that. We want to dance too. So we started dancing and taking tap classes and making as much noise as possible. And then we were told, you should really take ballet because ballet is going to really help out your tap skills. So then we started taking ballet and jazz and modern and flamenco, hip hop, sort of a well-rounded curriculum. And I loved it. I absolutely loved dancing. I loved the people. I loved the community. I mean, as you know, there are just a lot of wonderful people who are dancing and teaching dance, you
Yeah,
know?
yeah, yeah. It is a really special world to live in.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure. And I mean, growing up in that world, by the time I was in middle school, I was 6 feet tall. And I was bigger than every other person who was around me. And
Yeah.
it was like one of those, like, I love all these people and I love what I'm doing, but I'm different. I'm definitely different than the average dancer, you know? And then in choreography and pieces, I was always in the back. I listened to your podcast where you were talking about Nutcracker and not getting into Butler's Nutcracker.
Oh my gosh, yes, I'm so salty about that.
Yeah, but I'm salty too. My brother, he had never taken a dance class. He gets into it,
Right.
and then me, I'd been taking classes for a
Oh.
while, and I was like, he doesn't even know what he's doing. And
I know.
I never got
Yeah.
into it.
So salty.
Salty. It's okay. The salt stays with you.
Yeah. Love you,
Yeah,
Butler. Love you so much,
love it, love it. But
but allow tall girls
people,
into your nutcracker,
yeah,
please.
people love to dance. It's
Yeah.
those opportunities, right? They're
Right.
not there for everyone, you know?
Yeah. Especially
But
at that
I did have
age.
that at that age, for sure, for sure. I did have a scholarship, and part of that was that I got to assist with classes and some of the classes for the little kids, and that's how I really wanted to become a dance teacher. And I'm not like a lot of the guests on your show who have danced professionally. Like, I consider myself a dance professional, but I never made it as a professional dancer,
You
right?
absolutely are a dance professional for sure. I
But
mean,
there's that
yeah,
stigma. There's
I
like
see what you're saying.
the those who can't do, they teach, you know? And it's like, let's fight that a little bit, because it's like I made sure that I went down a path that made me become the best dance teacher that I could possibly be, even without that performing experience. And that's like studying the history, studying theory, studying anatomy, making sure things are as safe as possible. Like,
Yes.
I learned how to speak French because I love ballet so much. And I
Yeah.
wanted to be able to speak the terminology correctly instead of saying
Yeah.
sachet, chasse, like,
Yeah.
you
Exactly.
know.
Well, and I think you make a really good point too, because if the dance world were only comprised of professional dancers, there would be no
Yeah.
dance world. I
Right.
mean,
It's a bigger world.
the
It's a bigger
dancers
world.
themselves are a very small percentage that make up the actual dance community, I think, you
Right.
know?
Right. For sure. For
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
And who comes to the shows, you know, and who
Right.
puts on those productions, and who does the marketing for those productions, and who does the grant writing? Like,
Yeah.
how do we make this possible in this
Yeah.
big world? Because it's a huge, huge world. And so.
Yeah. So exciting. Yeah,
Yeah.
tell me a little bit about your the dance historian piece. I'm always fascinated by that.
For sure. So I went to Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And when I went into the school, I had four majors. I had
My
dance,
gosh. Not
education,
surprised at all.
don't be surprised, French, and accounting. And accounting because I was like, I can't make money as a dance anything. I don't believe in myself. And then I just didn't think I was good enough to make it in the field. And by the time I was a junior, I was like, I hate my accounting classes. They are so boring. This is not what I love to do. I love my dance. I love French. It was just like, I needed to drop this. And so this is where I graduated with a dance performance and choreography degree in French. And then I had accounting and management minors.
Yeah, which
It's
I'm
like
sure
it's
were
like a
useful.
they're useful. It's
Yeah,
useful. It's just
sure.
like when you have a passion and you have a burning passion and that's fueled by the history, by, you know, all of those things that are behind us when we're moving forward into what we're doing nowadays. It's like, this is my passion. This is what's burning inside of me. Even though I am tall, even though I'm big, like, I love dance, and specifically, I love ballet. more than anything. And I can't help my height. I can't help it, but I love it,
Who
you know.
cares?
Who
Who
cares? Who
cares?
cares? Yeah. I moved to
Yeah.
New Mexico because there's a master's of arts degree at the University of New Mexico with a concentration in dance history and criticism, which is a very long degree title. But it got me into studying dance history and really launching into reading as much as I could and watching as much as I could and conversating.
Yes.
And it they The professor that was my mentor there, her name is Dr. Marianne Santos Newhall. She calls herself a dancing historian, not a dance historian.
Ah.
So dance historian studies the history of dance. And dancing historian means, yes, we need to talk about the history. We need to write about it. We need to think about it. We need to have conversations, but also we need to actually dance in order to talk about dance history. So that means you can't talk about flamenco without trying flamenco. You
Yeah.
can't talk about tap without making some percussive sounds. You can't talk about jazz without actually like feeling the rhythm that's in the jazz. And the same thing with ballet, you have to go back to the ritual. You've got to go back to the court. You've got to go, you know, to the Baroque. You've got to go through the Romantic. You got to feel how the body changes through time,
Yes,
you know, and
and
that's
each one
where
is so significantly different and how it
so different.
feels.
Oh,
Oh.
yeah.
Oh, Sarah, you make me want to get into a dance studio like right
Let's
now.
do it. You gotta go. What are you doing right now?
I have one in my basement. It's cool. I'll go downstairs and do some plies after this.
Do it, do it. Everyone who's listening should be doing it too. Do some plies right now. Yes.
Great. That's so cool. Okay, so tell me a little bit about then the moving into your leadership role as the education program director, your teaching role, and how you got involved with Kachet.
Keshet. Cool. Okay. Yeah. So Keshet means rainbow in Hebrew. And the idea behind Keshet, it comes from our founder, Shira Greenberg. She wanted to create a place for dance where every single person under the rainbow is welcome. It doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter what background you have, how much money you have or don't have. It doesn't matter. Every single person who wants to dance should be able to, and everyone can dance. And that's sort of the idea behind Keshet. I subbed for a friend for a class, and that turned into them giving me a class and then more classes. And then I became a core teacher, and then I became the pre-professional education director at Keshet 8 years ago,
Great.
which has been a good fit. I align very strongly with Keshet's core values. One of which is inclusion, which you've already heard me explain why inclusion is so central to my heart. And so I believe so strongly in inclusion in dance, not just in ballet, but in dance in general. And a lot of another core value is excellence. A lot of times I think people question, can it be inclusive and can dance be excellent? And I believe it can be, and I believe
Absolutely.
that's what we're working towards at
I
and
love that.
authenticity, being your authentic self, coming as you are, you know, that's big. Opportunities, another core value, creating ways for people to go after what they want, seek what they want, make what they want, create what they want. And then the last two core values Kesha has are fluidity and personal growth. Fluidity, being able to adapt, which, as you can imagine, is important,
In the
especially in
last 2 years.
maybe. But also in personal growth, I grow every day as a teacher, and I see students grow every day on their own person, in their own person, being who they are.
Personal growth and as a teacher has been a kind of an overarching theme the last couple of months on the show, talking about when I spoke to Jennifer Milner and I mean so many other guests talking about how important it is for teachers to get continuing education when
Definitely.
a lot of us don't, you know, whether it's too expensive, we don't know about it, you know, access is limited, you know,
For
whatever
sure.
the reason is, I feel like so many ballet teachers out there, and you know, the show is centralized or mostly around ballet because that's what I know, so that's what I talk about.
Ballet.
I love hearing about all of it, but that's what I can personally speak to. It just feels like the old way of just pa like passing down that historical knowledge, of course, is so important. But as we also know, we have so many new modalities, so many new training methods, knowledge about anatomy, physiology, kinesiology, all of these things that just don't get built into your traditional hand-me-down teacher education unless you do go to a school that has a, cohesive pedagogical program, which not a lot of teachers do. So that personal development, continuing education piece is so important. And I just love hearing about that.
For sure. For sure.
So
It
for the listeners, I'm just gonna read a couple of little blurbs here, guys, just to kind of give you some context for the rest of our conversation. So Keshet's mission statement is rooted in dance, mentorship, and a welcoming space for the arts. Keshet activates community and fosters unlimited possibilities through education, engagement, innovation, and the pursuit of justice. And their vision statement is to celebrate the art of dance and be a welcoming home for the intersection of the arts, artists, and audience, actuating a flourishing environment for empowered individuals, nurtured communities, and sustained equity. Whew.
It's a lot.
A lot of
It's a big
really,
one.
I know, but it's so like I had to say it out loud because it's such good stuff in those two statements. So I really like to focus on the last part of the vision statement. So actuating a flourishing environment for empowered individuals, nurtured communities, and sustained equity. So there's some really great stuff in both of those statements. So focusing on this last little bit, what does that mean to you? How does Keshet work towards those things? Like, what does it look like in a practical day-to-day sense?
For sure, for sure. Keshet is it's a big organization, and there's a lot of work being done in a lot of different directions. So I'll speak first about the direction that I'm one direction I go in, which is in our community dance education. And that again, it's everyone can dance, and we do that through providing community classes and then pre-professional classes. Classes for anybody ages 2 to 102. For both our community classes and our pre-professional classes, we break down economic barriers to be able to dance by offering a sliding scale, non-competitive scholarship program, meaning that anybody who wants to dance, come on, tell us, we'll make it work, we'll figure it out. And then offering opportunities within our community outreach as well around Albuquerque and around New Mexico, and sometimes on Zoom too, right? Like that we are educating in our community. So that's one way that we are empowering individuals. We also at Keshet have a professional contemporary dance company. That they train in company class, they perform locally, they tour, maybe not so much during COVID. But the professional dancers being at the heart of Keshet impact, they go out and they help to nurture within our community and bring those ideas, bring their ideas to the community. As well as companies coming to Keshet, professional companies coming to and sharing within the community as well. Because we have a 30,000 square foot space and the very large
Oh,
black
jealous.
box. Oh, so much space in New Mexico, everyone. This is insane. So much space. So we have place for great dance to be happening, which is hard, I know for sure.
I mean, it sounds lovely. Like it's New Mexico, so it's gorgeous all the time, right? Great weather. I mean, let's
There's
all
no
go.
nor'easters over here. It's
I
quite
know.
warm.
Yeah, everyone, for my listeners, I'm currently looking at about 3 inches on the ground and it's actively snowing and I think we're probably gonna get about five more tomorrow. So I'm real jealous.
And I did not wear a coat today,
Oh my goodness.
so
I
there's
haven't left
that.
the house today.
Don't leave the house, it's too cold out there.
It's too cold. So
Oh gosh.
anyways, no,
Okay, back to the vision.
it
So let's
sounds
talk.
idyllic.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of work,
Yeah, of
definitely.
course. Let's talk about it.
Arts and social justice. Keshet also offers dance programming to incarcerated and paroling youth as well through our M3 program, which means that we have teachers and mentors going in and into detention centers and providing support and mentorship in arts programming and giving students an outlet for being able to dance and combining that with math and literacy inside
Inside
of New
New Mexico
Mexican
detention
detention centers.
centers. Yeah. Oh
Yeah.
my gosh, that is
Incredible work
beautiful.
that's being done, as well as having an arts incubator within our space and providing business of art classes, marketing and grant writing and residencies for visiting artists that come throughout the year. So there's a lot of ways that we serve our community here, but also that we attempt to go outside of just Albuquerque.
Wow, that is incredible. And that's the first, I mean, maybe there's other ones around the country, I don't know, but that's the first time I've ever heard of a dance community embracing and helping those in an incarcerated situation to
Yeah, I mean,
express themselves. I mean, it must be really therapeutic. Is there a dance therapy component to that, or is it mostly just mentorship and taking classes?
I know of communities in California and Ohio where this is also happening.
Interesting.
But it's there's a curriculum that's been developed at Keshet that is implemented within the facility, within the juvenile detention facility.
Gotcha.
And then there's conflict resolution that goes along with dance and choreography and empowering individuals through interacting, yes, with ballet, bringing
It's so
ballet
beautiful.
and
I love it.
contemporary and hip hop and mindfulness discussions that are happening within the program, for sure. Crazy, right?
Cool. Like
But cool.
my mind's blown right now. Yeah, it's very cool.
Oh.
Very, very cool.
Very cool. Happening in New Mexico.
Yeah. I
There's a
love
lot
that.
happening.
Yeah. Any other programs you wanted to discuss, or is that pretty much everything?
I think that's, yeah,
I mean, it's a lot.
that's a lot. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
what we do. From a day-to-day standpoint, that means that some people at Keshet are working starting 7 o'clock in the morning, and I teach nightly until 8:30, depending on the day.
Yeah.
There's always something happening. There's company rehearsals, there's classes, there's discussions, there's anti-racism discussions that we're having as staff.
Interesting.
We as we talk about how we use pronouns, as we talk about the land acknowledgement that Keshet has and how we're acknowledging the land that we're on.
Some really interesting things, I'm sure.
For
Yeah,
sure.
I love those discussions, though. I mean, from again, it seems like the ballet world can be very old-fashioned and very like, and when I say old-fashioned, I mean like 18th century old-fashioned.
We're stuck in the 18th century.
Right? Yeah. And so, I just love hearing institutions that are having these open conversations, that are facilitating this the kind of change that we absolutely have to have yesterday in order to move the art forward and to, be more inclusive and help the art form to grow and to exist in this new world that we live in that's not the
For
18th
sure.
century.
For sure.
Yeah,
Not a good
so
thing.
I'd love to hear, are there any specific ways that the program either has built in for mental health support of students? So whether it's having a referral list or programming, is there anything like that going on right now?
Yeah, I'll talk about my program that I run. One of the programs that I run is called KP3. There's a lot of M3, KP3, we have a lot of acronyms. KP3 stands for Keshet's Pre-Professional Program, three P's going on there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And in KP3, I've got dancers ages 8 to 18. Yes, they train intensively throughout the week and on the weekend, but it's not just a dance training program. It's a pre-professional program that seeks to build well-rounded dancers who are thinking dancers. And who are mentors, who are leaders within our community as they are connecting with professional company dancers in their rehearsals, or they're connecting with our community dancers, or post-release students who have exited the M3 program and who are integrating within the Keshet community. And our KP3 students, they have weekly check-ins. Whether that happens, sometimes it happens as a one-on-one check-in with me or with another faculty member, or they also have group check-ins where they're checking in with each other, and that can be about any myriad of things: what's going on in school, what's going on with their families, what's going on regarding their goals. We have each student set a goal for the semester, and we sort of check in throughout the semester. How's it going as you're working towards this SMART goal? How's so it's they come up with whatever they are really heading towards, and then we go after it to help them support. And that's an open, free conversation. Sometimes those one-on-one check-ins, they end in tears because they are so emotionally tied to the topic. And I think that's okay. It's when you're training, you're not just training a body, you know? It's a human who's got feelings and who cares. They wouldn't show up 6 days a week if they didn't care, you
Yeah,
know?
for sure. I think that's really interesting because with such a heavy schedule, I think a lot of artistic directors or, school principals, teachers that might be listening right now are probably saying to themselves, how in the world do you do that? How do you fit it in the schedule? Like, where is this happening? I think that's really fascinating. I've not really ever heard too much of any schools being able to do that. I think that's really
I
cool.
mean, how do you do anything? You make time for it. You
You
prioritize it.
prioritize it.
Yeah, and we have wonderful faculty members who, especially like when COVID first happened, every faculty member took three or four kids and then checked in once a week throughout all of, the sort of lockdown period, checked in for half an hour, and that meant the world to the students, you know?
I'm sure the parents too, it takes
And the parents.
a little bit of pressure off because they're stuck at home without their whole family and everybody's bouncing off. I mean, it's probably nice to have, someone else to talk to than just your parents or your friends on,
Well, and then you get to meet the dogs and you get to see the Lego creations and everything else, but it's been really important that we check in on the mental health of the dancers. And I think going forward, I don't think that's a part of the KP3 program that would go away. I think it's important to know the students on that level.
Absolutely, because, and I always say this too, that as a on a more micro level, as a teacher, if you have this information about your students going into your class that day, then you can teach more intelligently. And of course, you have to have a good syllabus to back you up. Like
Very important.
number
Number
one,
one.
don't go in cold and just wing it.
You know.
But at the same time, that flexibility, that fluidity you were talking about before, you have to have that in order to meet your students where they are that particular
Absolutely.
day or that week.
Absolutely.
And I feel like too, it humanizes the students in a way that I didn't always feel human, or humanized as a child. Like we had great teachers. We were, I think the two of us, I think anyway, we grew up in a, we're very lucky in the environment that we did grow
Incredibly
up in.
lucky. So lucky.
But being exposed to summer programs and guest teachers and things like that, like, I didn't always feel, and especially, my first year out of school and as a, trainee, definitely did not feel human at all. Very much like cattle. But these
Or
types of,
you walk into an audition and they give you a number. You are a number now, right?
Exactly.
For
So these
sure.
types of things really, emphasize to the student, no matter how old they are, that you are a human being and you are allowed to have these feelings and you're allowed to have a say in your goals and where you want to go. And we're just here to facilitate that. I always say that as a dance teacher, you're creating nothing. You're producing nothing. I hate it when say, oh, well, our school has produced all of these. No, you produce nothing.
I invest knowledge. I gift. I give my knowledge freely.
You're a
honestly.
facilitator. You're
I
not
facilitate.
producing. Yeah.
Who does the work though? I mean, I do a lot of work in prep, but my
Absolutely.
students bring their heart, they bring their mind, they bring their body, and then they work hard because they care.
Yeah, and I can only imagine too, having the type of support that they have, knowing that they're truly cared about as people, only makes them
Yeah.
want to work harder.
Definitely.
You know, I
Definitely.
mean, it's only going to
They know
build.
how much we invest in them, and they invest equally in us. And that's, at the end of class, that ritual of reverence. I can't wait to thank my students for how much they put into each class. And it's reciprocal. Like they thank me, I thank them, but it's like I'm so grateful that we did this together, because what would a dance teacher be without students? Without the dancers. That's the heart.
That reminds me when I have a new group of, 7 or 8 year olds, like that first sort of quote real ballet class,
Yeah.
the little ones, maybe
Yeah.
6 years old or something. When I teach them about reverence, in the first class or two, I always say to them, well, what do you do when you go to the ballet? And at the very end, the dancer bows and we clap, right? But the reason why we do that is that we're showing appreciation for how well the dancer danced, but they are bowing so they can tell us how much they appreciate us coming to
Absolutely.
see them. And it's the same
Yes.
thing in class. It gives
Yes.
me the opportunity to thank you and you the opportunity to thank me. And I
Yes.
think, like, I never thought of it that way
I was like, we better curtsy now.
How well can I curtsy and how low can I bow? Like, am I
Yes.
doing this right? And
Entry companies too.
yeah, exactly. So I think that approach, I mean, just that mutual gratitude is so important to build the trust that's necessary in a
Definitely.
healthy student-teacher relationship.
Definitely. Definitely.
Do you feel like these values and things they transfer over to the professional company?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. The professional company are fantastic mentors. A lot of them do teach the students as well, especially the students who are in the pre-professional program. But this year, the top level of the pre-professional program is in rehearsal with the company, and
Oh,
they
that's
are
exciting.
ecstatic. So the mentorship is definitely happening from my little 8-year-olds who are working oh so hard, and even they are starting to assist the 6 to 8-year-old classes, so that
Oh, that's
they are
precious.
mentoring up to the top level. I have a 17-year-old is my oldest right now, who's working with the company for the first time. It's definitely a trickle down mentorship model.
That's wonderful. I mean, I'm sure that's so rewarding to see that whole sort of life cycle, if you want to call it that.
I love too that, I mean, in the professional company, they're not just, there are people in the professional company who are in their 30s. Like, it's not like you have a dance career that is so short. We're about keeping healthy bodies and moving, and how, like, why does your career have to stop when you're a certain age?
Or because you had a kid.
Or because you had a kid, why do you have to stop? You don't have to. You don't have
I really love that. I mean, a lot of these famous dancers are starting to truly normalize having a family as part of,
Yeah,
a dance career. And I
for
love
sure.
that, but it's good to see it on a smaller scale too, not just the big names at NYCB or something.
For sure. Definitely. Definitely.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I'd also like to touch on another program that we haven't talked spoken a lot about yet.
Yeah.
I understand that you guys have an adaptive dance program, and I'd love
Yeah.
to hear about how that came around and how it's been designed, how it's implemented, all that stuff.
Sure. So I want to recognize that terminology is super important, and so I don't want to offend anyone. Some people call it mixed ability, physically integrated, disabled dance. We at Keshet, we do use mixed ability. We use adaptive. We use that terminology. And this is another program that Shira wanted. Again, anybody who wants to dance is welcome. And so all of the dance education classes we have, community and pre-professional, are able to integrate mo mobility devices as well as physical and developmental abilities in all classes. So that means that as a dance teacher and as a ballet teacher, I've taught individuals with Down syndrome and on the autism spectrum, and blind individuals, and dancers with cerebral palsy. And it is incredible because they're human beings who just want to be able to dance, you know? And so it's integrated across all of our dance education programming. If you want to take a community class and you're 6 years old and you have a mobility device, you just come on in, and we adapt to the students. And if you're a student who happens to use a wheelchair but you still want to learn how to do a variation, we work with
Figure it
you
out.
know, like we figure it out together. We figure out what you can do, and we focus on what you can do and how you can get stronger, how to make goals that are going to help you push across the floor. I was working with a dancer in a wheelchair last year. We have a huge studio space, and it took her, I think it took 16 pushes on her wheelchair to get her all the way across the floor. And by the end of the semester, it took her 8.
Oh my
Because she
gosh.
was reaching backwards and she was propelling forwards,
Right, and then she could do some port-a-bra or
and that's her chasse.
whatever
Exactly, that's
other
her chasse.
choreography she needed to do. Yeah, that's super cool.
Exactly.
Love that.
So, yeah, we also integrate it within our language as we're teaching. So rather than saying, if everyone's sitting down and there's if maybe there's somebody in a wheelchair, and rather than saying everybody get up, you know, everybody rise to your highest level. Right? Or like, if there's a student in a wheelchair, then the teacher might get a chair. We have extra wheelchairs that are around our
To
building
demonstrate.
to demonstrate, right? And that's been really fun for the other students too, to try out what does it feel like to be in a chair and to use a mobility device, to use a walker, meeting people where they are.
And incorporating it seamlessly into the curriculum, it sounds like, and the
Absolutely.
choreography, I would assume as well.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And that's the beauty of contemporary dance, you know, whether it's contemporary ballet or contemporary modern, like, is that I honestly believe that's where the field is moving, right? Let's open it up. Anybody who wants to dance, let's go, let's figure it out. 'Cause that's all we're doing. It's just, let's figure
It's not a secret club.
It is not a secret club. That's
I
true.
always sort of felt like it was, you know, like, oh
Yeah.
well, you know, my non-dance friends don't get it, you know, like this kind of attitude. But it's like
Oh yeah.
now I really truly feel like, you know, obviously I'm an adult now with a fully formed brain. And you know, been through some therapy, but I truly do feel that, you know, and I've said this before too, that if you want a seat at the table, just sit down.
Right.
You
That's right.
know?
Spot on. There's enough room for everyone. There is.
So good.
Good stuff. Good
Good
stuff.
stuff, good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So another point that I wanted to talk about, and you touched about this a little bit, but as we all know, historically, and I have like the A1 grade A historian on my show right now, which is super, super cool.
Oh, man.
And I'm sure there are like so many books we could talk about. That's like a whole other show to
Yeah.
do a few book
Ooh.
reviews. Yeah.
Follow up.
Right? Exactly. Stay tuned. But access to dance and access to ballet specifically,
Definitely.
not just, I mean, yes, financial, that's part of it. But also culturally, it seems like access to ballet has been very like cis white female, you know. But you know, let's talk about the access to ballet in all different, you know, avenues, however, whatever that looks like, and what you guys are doing to try to lift that barrier and meet that challenge.
Ballet is expensive.
It's
It
so
can be.
expensive.
It
Yeah,
can be.
shoes
I
are
mean, the
expensive,
shoes,
leotards, tights,
yes,
men's
all of the.
clothing.
Oh my goodness.
It's
Oh my
all
goodness.
expensive, no matter
It
what you
is.
wear.
It is. Yeah. So one thing that we do at Keshet to remove that barrier, is that we offer all of our programming, all of our dance education programming that we have at Keshet on a sliding scale. from $0 to $50 or $100, or depending on if you're buying a single class or a package. And yeah, basically families tell us what they can afford, and we don't question. We just say, if you can afford $10 a week, that's great. If you can afford $100 a week, that's great. And then in addition to the sliding scale, we do also have volunteer hours and opportunities that the students can do. For back to my days of assisting, right? We have students who are assisting. We have greeters at the front desk to sort of direct people which way to go or answer questions or to be able to help out. We have some students who film themselves, and either they feel comfortable sharing it on social media or they don't. I don't, it doesn't matter if they feel comfortable or not. Like the point is that they're practicing filming themselves, and then we have a record of their growth and development over the years. We don't necessarily need to use it for social media because, as you know, there's a lot of content out there.
But from a curriculum development perspective, that's some really good data to have.
It's becoming more important in the dance field that you know how to film yourself well. I'm looking at all kinds of auditions with my students right now. They're getting ready for summer auditions and things like that. And it's like, you have to be able to film yourself well. You can be the best dancer in the world, but if you're shooting up your nose, like, doesn't matter how
Bad
high your
lighting, terrible
business
angle, arms cut off.
Exactly. So sliding scale and scholarship is one way that we are removing barriers. Another way, I'm thinking sort of dress code has been really important and a really good discussion. A couple years ago, we changed our dress code so that our pre-professionals either show up in a leotard and tights, or they show up in a t-shirt and tights or leggings, you know, like
Like thick
I
tights.
don't care. Like whatever, just come and dance. If you're if you're in ballet, you need to have ballet shoes. But what color they are, you pick your color. You do you, you know? Yeah, and so changing up the dress code has made it more comfortable for some of our students.
No, I love that. I've kind of talked a lot about that with a few of my guests, and I know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Balanced Ballerinas podcast.
Yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
I had Georgia on a little while ago, and that's something that she has been really kind of, I don't want to say struggling with. She's been talking about a lot, and like the pros and cons, and why do we have to wear pink tights? Like what is the reasoning behind that? You know, is it just tradition? Is it, you know, this, that, or the other thing? And I think providing access to students within reason, you know, some freedom of choice on what they're allowed to wear just to class, I think can be very liberating. Because, I mean,
Incredibly liberating. Yeah.
I'm sure that there was probably some days that I would have been happy to wear a t-shirt and thick tights to class instead of a leotard, you know?
Yep.
Like, why not?
Why not? Why not? Because the important thing is that you come to class. The important thing is that you're dancing. That's the important thing, not what color they are. If they're going to match your skin tone, I think that's beautiful.
Yeah,
That's
that's what you feel
fabulous.
comfortable with.
If that makes you feel more comfortable, if that makes you feel empowered as a dancer and you're going to do more with your dancing, it's going to come from a deeper place. Wear what makes you feel
Let's do
good.
it. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. And that's for the pre-professionals. Our community
Right.
dancers, they can wear whatever they want to class. Things that they can move.
And that's important too from that financial piece as well for
Yeah.
access, because not everyone can afford even to go to Target and pick up a leotard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
For
oh.
sure. For sure. We partner with our there's a local dance wear company.
Okay.
And they have a partnership relationship with Keshet where they give us back a certain percentage
Oh,
of
wow.
their what students who are from Keshet are purchasing at their business. And then we in turn give that back in scholarship to students,
Nice.
especially like the ones who are on point and having to buy points, you know, like it adds up.
I mean, it's been a while since I was on point, and it's been a while since I had to buy my own point shoes. But let me tell you, I take kids to go get fitted for point shoes, and I'm going, oh my gosh, what am I doing to their parents' wallet? Like, I feel so bad. And it's only getting worse, you
Yeah,
know?
for
Yeah,
sure.
so
For
that's
sure.
really cool.
Yeah. Break down those
Well,
barriers. Break them down.
yes. Yeah, because they're
Yeah.
not necessary.
They're not.
They're
They're
not
not. And
necessary.
more people need ballet in their lives.
Yeah.
I am happiest when I'm dancing ballet, honestly. You know, I'm old, but I love
Same.
it.
Same.
Love it. Still, always will, I'm sure. I aspire to be one of those silver swans who is doing port-a-bras and loving it. It's my dream.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'd love to hear, this is kind of like off topic, but and we can cut this if you want to, but now that I have you, I'm like, I don't want to let you go. I'd love to hear a forecast from a historian's perspective, a dancing historian's perspective. I'd love to hear a forecast of the future of ballet because of your deep knowledge of where we came from, and because your willingness, not only willingness, but active participation in the way that we're approaching it, from dress code to, sliding scale payments to, all of these things that we've talked about today.
Yeah.
Where would you like to see it go? And do you think it's going that direction?
This is quite the question.
I got
Sarah, there are many sides.
It's super
There are
nuanced.
many sides.
I know.
Yeah. There are those who I know exist in the ballet world who want to keep it that pristine, pure ballet of
Yeah, the snow globe.
the snow globe. And then there's those of us who believe that ballet is so empowering. And it is so monumental and life-changing that it can't be kept as this precious thing. It
Yeah.
needs more people need ballet in their lives. The shy kid who can't speak at all and then is empowered to do entrechassis, they need that in their life. And this is where it could just boil down to dance in general, but it's like ballet has this, it's this special thing. It's got everything. It's got the musicality. You can rely on it. I mean, for me, ballet is home. It's you can rely on it. You can have these patterns that you have to figure it out. And it's my forecast is that we're going to see more dancers who have been inspired by Misty Copeland. We are going to see more Calvin Royale the thirds. Like, we are going to see more James Whitesides. We are going to see the world open up a ballet.
It's like
It's
we're seeing the
it's what
rest
I
of the
want.
world open, like the rest of the world, I feel like, is opening up to
Slowly but
anyone.
surely.
Slowly
Slowly
but
but
surely, yes.
surely.
This is like a good, hopeful thing.
Yeah. And aren't artists usually, I mean, we're artists are here to reflect our world. Some swans just happen to use wheelchairs. And that's okay.
Yeah. I love it. Oh, so
Yeah.
good. So good. You're gonna make me cry. So good.
It's true. It's
I mean, it
very
doesn't take much these days, what with these
true.
hormones, but let me tell you.
Hormones going on.
It's so
Oh.
beautiful though. It makes me feel better, like knowing that I'm going to have a child in the world and knowing that, yes, she's probably going to dance in some capacity,
She's
at
gonna have
least.
long legs like her mama. She's
We'll
going to
see.
have the most beautiful movement
We'll see.
quality.
We'll see.
She
We'll see.
is.
But I mean, and if that manifests itself in softball, that's fine too,
True.
But it makes me feel so much better knowing that places like Kesha exist. Like it's a great example of what could be done.
Yeah.
Not that any one institution's perfect or anything, but it's a great example of where we could go.
It can go that way, right?
It can happen. You can make it happen. It works.
Yep.
It's possible, and that to get quality dance training, I don't have to put my daughter through mental abuse.
You don't have to.
No.
She doesn't have to.
No. So, yeah, it makes me so, so happy to know that this is going on in the world.
It's going on. Yeah. It's going on in the world.
All right. Before I let you go, one last question. And I pose this to all of my guests and I get some fun answers. So it's a little lighter. So I'm going to put you in my time machine. And I'm going to send you back to 14-year-old Sarah. Ooh. All the way back, the tall one. And I'd love to know if you could stand in front of all of us in our class, what advice would you give to all of us in that class?
Yeah. I think that if there isn't a place for you, don't be afraid to build it for yourself. Don't be afraid to do something new. When I was at Hope College, there was there was no Nutcracker. Obviously, for my youth, I had always wanted to be in a Nutcracker, and me and my friends at Hope College put together a Nutcracker, and I danced in it.
I love it.
And it's one of those things where, if something doesn't exist, don't be afraid to build it, because it might take a lot of work. It might take bringing other people together, building a community around you. But that's what we need, is we need more voices building more things that really speak to them.
Yeah.
And ballet can do that. Mm-hmm. And it's so powerful. It's such a powerful tool.
So, oh, I love it. Oh, so good. Say. So good. Thank you so much. All right. So before you go, please, please, please tell my listeners how they can connect with Keshet in all ways, shapes, and forms.
Sure. Okay. So KeshetArts.org, KeshetArts.org is where you can catch us online. Instagram is Keshet Dance Co. If you just so happen to live outside the state of New Mexico, we do have what's called the Keshet Makerspace Experience, which is a residency program for choreographers, dance makers, to develop their craft. Maybe you've got an idea that you're germinating, maybe that you are in full development of a production. We have an application that you can fill out once a year. You can come and use our studios, our Black Box Theater space, studio space. Keshet Makerspace has cohorts, and you work within your cohort. You develop relationships with those individuals. There's business classes, marketing, grant writing, things like that. And we do that in exchange for our makers giving classes to our professional company, our community, our pre-professionals. And I absolutely love this program. So keep an eye out for the Keshet Makerspace. Yes. I want more ballet choreographers, ballet teachers to come on down to New Mexico for a residency.
That's awesome. Yeah. And guys, I'll link everything in the show notes.
Awesome.
So you can click on those links easily. I'll also just make sure you watch out for that.
So
many good things. I'm so grateful, Sarah, for your time today. So grateful for the program and all of your staff. I mean, can you just please tell them all I said thank you? Next time you have a faculty meeting, just tell them all Sarah says thank you.
No, but thank you for all the work you're doing too on this wonderful podcast. Oh, and thank you all for listening.
Wouldn't happen without my listeners, for sure.
For sure. For sure.
All right, well, you enjoy the rest of your day, and I know I'll be talking to you very soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Bye. Thank you. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Don't you guys just love Sarah's energy? I'm so jealous of her students. Just talking to her made me want to sign up for a class like yesterday. The world's truly lucky to have her as a teacher and to have a place like Keshet out in the dance world. One of the many things that blew my mind was the idea of having weekly check-ins with a mentor for each and every student. I mean, we have school counselors and mentors, So why not have a dance mentor too? Someone in an official capacity to check in with the students, answer their questions that, let's be honest, we don't have time to answer in class, and give them the guidance they need to be the best dancer possible. Amazing. Something simple, maybe not simple right away to implement, but it's doable. And it's a simple thing that is really going to improve your dancer's experience. Anyway, I hope you all were inspired by the example Keshet is setting and think of your own ways to provide happier, mentally safe spaces for your dancers. Before I go, I wanted to share with you guys the sweetest note I received on my Instagram the other day in my DMs. This comes from Elizabeth T. Hi there. I'm a physical therapist specializing in dance medicine, and I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed your podcast on parenting a dancer with Jennifer Milner. I've already shared it with a few people who I know need to hear it. So much of what you two talked about, I have noticed and have begun discussing with my dancers and parents. I find that sometimes parents can be just as meek and shy about standing up to the director as the dancer is. And it's almost like the parent is grateful when I give them permission to say something to the dance teacher or director. When it comes to the health of their child, usually they get on board pretty fast. Anyway, it was a very helpful episode, and thank you. Well, thank you, Elizabeth, because let me tell you, running this one-woman show every week is not always easy, and I just love hearing the encouraging words. I love that the episode with Jennifer spoke to you, and it sounds like to many of your patients. And you're right, it's hard, especially if you're a parent of a dancer who didn't necessarily grow up in the dance world. I don't know, it just I can imagine how intimidating that conversation could be. And because you don't want to seem like, quote, that mom. You want to have your child kind of navigate the things on their own and not hold their hand too much, but it is really helpful to have that permission to step in when there truly is something wrong and that something needs to change. So I appreciate your words. I appreciate you sharing with your patients and to all of you out there. I love hearing from you guys. So if you do have questions, thoughts, or topics you want me to cover, feel free to reach out to me, DM me on Instagram at dancebetterpodcast, or you can email them to me at dancebetterpodcast@gmail.com. And I would more than happy to talk offline if you want me to share on the show, I can do that. Just following up on the post I did on Instagram the other day, I want you all to remember that yes, I use the podcast as a way to put out great information, scientific research, advice from mental health experts, but also it's a platform for you. This is your show. And, sharing your story and sharing your experiences is so empowering, not just for you, but for the rest of the ballet world. And these types of stories, and people growing in their own confidence to speak is what's going to make permanent and real change in the ballet world. So feel free to reach out to me if you have a story you'd love to share, whether on or off the show. I love hearing it all. Thanks so much for listening today. And as always, don't forget to follow the show for the latest updates on Instagram at Dance Better Podcast. And I would love if you could also give the show a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, follow the pod on Spotify, and of course, share it with 3 friends to get the word out. Thank you so much for listening today, you guys. I cannot wait to learn with you on the next episode. Bye.